south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Hey, here's something that's pretty weird. You know, there are very few American industries left. We know that, right? But you'd think that Boeing aircraft, you know, like the 767, the workhorse of the air, would at least be American-made. Well, you'd be mistaken, because most of the wing is made in the U.S., but the fuselage, you know, the center tube, guess where? Made in Japan, and the flaps and some other electronics in Italy. Meanwhile, most of the other interior electronics, China. Hard to imagine, or is it? Oh, by the way, you should never, ever drink regular water on the plane, even though they'll serve it to you anytime you ask, even if you have to take a pill. Skip their water. And especially, don't ask for anything with ice. That ice made on the plane is with that very same contaminated water. And as for pills, make sure you take them with some kind of liquid that you got from a sealed bottle. Because, you know, in the planes, bacteria levels well exceed the norms. And who sets the norms? Well, of course, some government agency. You can trust them, right? Anyway, since it's so well known in the aviation industry that the water's so bad in the airplanes, they're adding not only chlorine, but all kinds of other chemical additives to hold those bacteria populations down. Yum, yum. What I'm saying is don't ask for just a glass of water. Make sure you get something that's in a bottle and you've opened the seal yourself. Or at least you watch the flight attendant do it for you. Now, you know, I travel a lot and I found out that just recently anyway, in some cases I haven't been able to bring my really dinky water purifier along on the plane, you know, as a carry-on. Could be a bomb, who knows, a grenade, and if I threw it in the airplane's water reservoir tank, it would turn into a dirty bomb, right? Anyway, if you're going to bring your water purifier, or even one of those purifiers that has a straw attachment, stow it in your luggage, or as you pass through TSA, they just might confiscate it, and then you're out, what, $20 to $50? In fact, I was told by one grossly overweight TSA guy in Panama. Yep, they've got their own Latin version of TSA slugs there. Certainly trained by their U.S. counterparts, you know, because Panama is a strategic country, being that it has the canal and all. Anyway, he said if your canister or purifier has any liquid in it whatsoever, you can't bring it through as a carry-on. By the way, people have asked me if there's some kind of war or conflict breaking out in the first world, what would be the safest countries in Latin America to hang out? And my answer? Well, I could tell you the three least safe countries to be in. My opinion, of course. Mexico, because it's got a border with the U.S., and Panama, because it's got the canal. And number three, Argentina, because it's got a couple of nuke plants. The fact is, I wouldn't want to live within a couple hundred miles of a nuke plant anywhere, much less in Latin America, where maintenance is kind of an afterthought. By the way, this show is going out on March 3rd, 2017. And as promised, the sign-up sheet for my July 2017 Expat Insider Seminar, to be held off the Gringo Tourist Trail in and around Guatemala, Central America, is up and ready to go at www.thenewexpat.com website. So if you want to kick your Plan B into high gear and get an extremely valuable boots-on-the-ground experience, go to thenewexpat.com website. Again, thenewexpat.com. And you'll see right at the center of the page a link to my July 2017 Expat Insider Seminar. If you click on that, it'll take you to the sign-up sheet, and you'll see all the details and exactly what it's all about. And remember, this is the perfect chance to kill two birds with one stone. Not only to come to the seminar, but to do what a lot of smart expats have been doing. That would be applying for permanent or temporary residence in Guatemala at the very same time. Now remember, Guatemala's one of the easiest places in all Latin America to get your permanent or temporary residency. For temporary residency, you don't have to prove any kind of income whatsoever. Then after a year and a half, 2 years, you slip automatically into permanent residency. Now, if you have an income of $1,000 a month or more coming from an outside source, pension, trust, social security, real estate rentals, whatever, then you can go right to permanent residency. And after that, 5 years will get you to your passport and nationality. So the point is, if you're coming down to my July 2017 Expat Insider Seminar, while you're down, you can sign the paperwork and apply for your permanent or temporary residency. That'll save the expense of taking more time off in the future, getting hotels, airline tickets, and all the other things you'll have to plan if you're going to come down. So be smart about it. If you're coming down to the Expat Insider Seminar, you'd be selling yourself short if you didn't apply for your residency at the same time. But remember, it'll take you about a month to get your paperwork together up in the state where you live, like your police or sheriff's good conduct report that you'll have to get certified and authenticated in the state where you live. There are some steps you have to go through, and it takes about a month. So if you're going to apply for residency at the same time as you come down to the seminar, you don't want to wait till the last minute. Anyway, once you sign up for the seminar, you'll be getting all the information on how that process goes and what you'll have to do to get your residency. So why am I pushing Guatemala for residency? Well, it may sound like it. I'm just mentioning it because it's so easy to obtain, at least for now. There are a half dozen or more other Latin countries that also fit the bill nicely. However, Guatemala has one huge advantage, but I think it's going to go away pretty soon. That is, you only have to be in the country one day a year to maintain your residency. And most people don't realize how valuable that little point is until they've applied for residency in another country like Nicaragua or Costa Rica, Panama. In fact, more than three quarters of Latin countries, you have to be in that country from 3 to 6 months a year to maintain your residency. And get this, in some Latin countries, believe it or not, you have to ask for and obtain government permission to leave so as to maintain your residency while you're gone. And though almost all residencies in Latin countries will lead to nationality and passport after 5 years or so, you have to maintain your residency in good standing during that five-year period. And if you stay out of the country just one day more per year than the allowable period, well, you have to reapply and the clock starts all over again. The entrance and exit stamps on your passport will tell it all. In fact, I know a few cases where that's happened, and believe me, it's a very frustrating and aggravating experience when that happens. Now, I've heard gringos say, well, you know, in places like, for example, Nicaragua, they're flexible about that. Sure, you're supposed to remain in the country at least 90 days a year, but gringos will tell you, well, they don't hold hard and fast to that rule. How about 3 or 4 years from now? Remember, those exit and entrance stamps are permanently stamped in your passport. So again, Guatemalan's one of the only Latin countries left where you only have to be in the country one day a year to maintain that residency. And then after 5 years with permanent residency, you get your passport and citizenship, and those rules no longer apply because now you're a 100% Guatemalan citizen. And once you've got it, it can't be taken away or revoked unless you do something really stupid like commit an act of espionage against your new country or commit treason. Yeah, right, 007, that's the plan. Oh, and the other big advantage Guatemalan residency has is that you don't have to get an FBI report like you do for almost all other Latin residency programs now. I predict that's going to change soon, too. So as it stands, then, what does that mean? That means you just go down to your local county sheriff's office and pull that report in one day. However, with most other residency programs, you gotta send your fingerprints to the FBI and request a personal background check, which usually takes 3 weeks to a month, but I've known cases where it's taken 3 months. So again, the sign-up sheet is ready for my July 2017 Latin Insider Seminar, and along with that, you've got the opportunity to kill two birds with one stone. So I advise you, if you're serious about that Plan B and eventually voting with your feet, you can get started by going to www.thenewexpat.com and clicking on the seminar link. By the way, for all you past Insider Seminar attendees who like to be repeat offenders, you know, we do get repeat offenders. In fact, I've had some seminar attendees come down, get this, 4 different times. Some 3 times and others twice. So you might wonder why so many people re-up like that. Well, I guess you'll just have to come down and see for yourself. Maybe it's because repeat offenders know they automatically get $1,000 off the seminar price. Oh, and by the way, the seminar sign-up sheet reflects the early bird discount price, which on June 1st will revert back to the normal price. All right, since earlier we were talking about airplanes and airports, just recently, quite a few people have sent me this link, and they're worried. It's an article that starts out by saying, for 15 years, airport security has become more invasive. Then the author says, on my latest U.S. flight to Mexico, all of us passengers were presented with something we'd never seen before. We'd been through the usual boarding pass checks, passports, scanners, and pat-downs. But this time it was different. Halfway down the jet bridge, there was a new layer of security. There were two U.S. Marshals, heavily armed and dressed in dystopian-style black regalia. They stood next to an upright machine with a glowing green eye. Every passenger, one by one, was told to step on a mat and look into the green scanner. It was doing a retinal scan, scanning our eyes and matching that scan with the passport, which was also scanned yet again. So what was my choice, really, he says. If I refused, well, no flight then, right? But I did notice that every one of us was a bit shaken by the experience. From what I could see, it was a first for everyone. Anyway, the article goes on saying what an invasion of privacy that is. Of course it is. So bottom line, that's what we're all looking forward to in the future. Anyone flying out of the U.S., that is. So are you okay with that? Well, to me, it's just one more reason added to the many that you need a plan B and it's time to vote with your feet. And now I understand it's happening at certain European airports, too. And I know for a fact it's happening at Tucumán Airport in Panama. In fact, the last two times I went through, I not only got shoved into a line where we all had to give up our fingerprints on one of those digital scanners, they also made us stare into a camera for digital photos. And by looking at the sophistication of the equipment, I can only assume they were doing a retinal scan there too, and that was about a year ago. So, you bothered by that? You scared yet? You should be. Okay, now let's skip to an email. This one's from Max. He says, "Good morning, Johnny. I've been listening for 2 years now. I'm a couple episodes behind, but I never miss your show. In fact, in the episode I was listening to yesterday, you said you've never heard anything too bad about those sketchy-looking point-of-use water heater shower heads. All right, let me stop a second to refresh your memory on those hot water shower point-of-use electric heaters. If you remember, I mentioned that probably only 2% of all Latin homes have central hot water heating. And about 25% of Latin homes have no hot water at all. They're plumbed just with cold water. And about 50% or more of Latins have hot water, but only at the shower head. They're little electric add-on units that turn on as soon as the water pressure comes, and they're dangerous and even scary looking in general. Why? Because almost all of them have thick electric wires hanging from them. Yep, water everywhere, and you don't expect electric wires, do you? And they're right on top of the shower head, about a foot from your own head. Dangerous looking, yes. Do you get shocked once in a while? Yes. But like I said in the past show, I've never read or heard about anyone getting electrocuted by one of those things. Everybody gets shocked, though. By the way, almost all middle-class Latin homes have them, and you can nearly always find them in 1- and 2-star hotels and backpacker hostels, too. So you'll see them everywhere. That means if you're invited to stay over at any Latin person's house, you're bound to encounter one of those things eventually. And as for me, even if I turn the water on and no hot water comes at all, and that's probably what's going to happen half the time, there is a switch or a series of switches on each of those little shower heads. My advice, no matter how cold the water's coming out, don't be tempted to go for any of those switches. It's not recommended. So if hot water comes up, okay. If it doesn't, well, just grin and bear it and don't tap, twist, or jolt a thing because it'll jolt you right back. You'll know what I mean when you see one of these things up front and personal. Anyway, the email goes on to say, "Well, Johnny, here's the story of my first interaction with one of those things. I moved to Peña Blanca, Honduras to teach English in 2014. The house the school put us in did not have hot water." Exactly as I mentioned, huh? Anyway, Max says, "They quickly installed a point-of-use showerhead for all of us teachers. The warm water was great, but every time we turned it on, we'd receive a shock from the handle. So we'd just try to turn it on and off as quickly as possible." Then he says, "The management finally sent someone to fix it after getting mañana'd to death for a week or so. Their idea to fix it the first time was wrapping electrical tape around the handle in an attempt to break the circuit. They were scared to test it themselves, so I had to be the test monkey. Surprise, surprise, I still got shocked. Somehow, they fixed it so the handle wouldn't shock us, but it wasn't fixed all the way. Now, you see, if you leaned into the small shower and accidentally touched a wall, you also received a shock. Maybe this was their way of waking us all up. They never fixed this electrical problem, by the way. Not to mention," he says, "the wires hanging above the shower head would start to smoke if you took a shower longer than 2 minutes. They eventually caught on fire one time while I was showering, which got me jumping out of the shower soapy and naked to my roommate's surprise. They eventually installed a real hot water heater in that house just after I moved out." So that's my story of one of those electrical point-of-use hot water heaters you spoke about a while back. By the way, Johnny, he says, I emailed you a while back about your water filter system, and I'm glad to say I'm finally making it happen. My brother and I are driving my Jeep from South Carolina to Honduras, and I'm loading it up with goods. It's a 2009 Jeep. I've read that your vehicle is supposed to be 7 years or less old in order to import it. It used to be 10 years in Honduras, and recently they changed it to 7 years. I've been the owner of this vehicle since I bought it new in 2009. He says, Johnny, do you know of any contact or lawyer in Honduras that deals with this kind of thing? Any advice would be appreciated. Anyway, sorry for the long email, Johnny. Love your show. It's been super helpful and informative for the couple of years I've been listening. Thanks for everything, Max. All right, a couple things here about Max's email. Number one, I did give him a contact for a lawyer in Honduras. I'm pretty well connected down here, and when you need a lawyer from whatever country, I can usually shag one up. One that's not a ripoff, doesn't give you gringo prices, and is not a crook, which is really the most important thing. By the way, they're all pretty slow. They operate on mañana time. You should know that by now. In fact, over the years, I have recommended lawyers, and occasionally people will come back to me and say, Johnny, but, you know, the guy's not getting anything done. He's way too slow. And I say, go ahead, change lawyers. And guess what? Inevitably, every single time the person comes back to me and says, you know what? I got another guy, but he's even worse. He's slower, and I have to train him up. Well, that's Latin America, and you just have to get used to the fact that lawyers are always on mañana time. So basically, the number one most important thing and when selecting a lawyer is getting an honest one. Difficult thing to do down here, too. But I've been down here long enough to have made the acquaintance of a couple of very honest lawyers. Unfortunately, again, every one of them's on mañana time. So get used to it. So what's that like? Well, when they say they're going to send you an email in 2 days, double that or triple that. When they say they're going to phone back by 6, it'll be 6 tomorrow or the next day. Hey, I can't tell you how many times I've been through this conversation with uptight, I want it now, even pushy gringos. Hey, I was like that the first couple of years I was down here too. But believe me, no amount of pushing or screaming or aggravation is going to get your lawyer or anyone else down here to move any faster. Now, you longtime listeners might remember when I told you I hired a pretty good architect, young guy right out of school, and I said, if you get the project done by so-and-so date, a date, by the way, he selected himself, and I said, well, if you get it done by that date, I'll give you a $2,500 bonus. And guess what? He tried a little harder than he probably would have normally with that carrot dangling in front of him like that, but he never made the deadline, a finished date he selected himself. And you know, up in the States, money is the number one incentive to get things done faster, or at least on time. And down here, well, there's no guarantee it'll work that way. It seems Latins aren't stressed at all by deadlines, because they rarely keep them. Why do you think the phrase mañana time is so popular? For example, if your mechanic says the car will be done on Wednesday, figure Friday. If you have a party or a get-together and you tell everyone to be there by 4, figure 5:30 or 6. And of course, all the gringos and expats will show up on time, as well as the German expats. In fact, they'll be an hour early, which is why some of us know better, and if it's a 4 o'clock event, we'll put down 3 on the invitation. And they'll still be late. In fact, I went to a garden wedding not so long ago. It was supposed to start at 4 in the afternoon, and the bride did not get there till 6:30. And of course, the Latin guests, they showed up late, and us gringos were saying, hey, bad news, looks like she backed out. A no-show. But no, the phone calls came in every half hour saying no, she was still getting her hair and her nails and her pedicure done at the beauty parlor. Meanwhile, everyone was sucking up the booze and the goodies at the party. She rolled in 2.5 hours late. Big sigh of relief by the gringos, but the Latins, they didn't bat an eye. Now, you know up in the States, if the bride's even a half an hour late, people start freaking out. And an hour late, well, it's over. She's not coming. Everyone's going home. But back to Max's email. He talks about bringing his car down and that to bring one into Honduras, it can't be more than 7 years old. Now, just a few years back, all Latin countries let you import a car no matter how old it was. But slowly but surely, even maggot-brained politicians started to realize old junks on the road are not good for the country. They pollute, they're eyesores, and they're dangerous. So laws are being passed limiting the age of the vehicle you can import into a Latin country. That sounds good at first glance, doesn't it? But meanwhile, you can drive practically anywhere down here, blowing smoke, with broken mirrors and shattered windshields, busted headlights and taillights, so what's the point? So anyway, Max says he did a stint in Peña Blanca, Honduras. That's a small town, by the way, of about maybe 35,000 people. And I can only imagine that teaching job he's talking about is part of some religious mission or NGO project. Since if you've ever been to the place, you'd know they've got no helicopter private schools there. Hey, don't get me wrong. An English teaching job down here, nothing wrong with that. But this town, it's way off the Gringo Tourist Trail and out in the boonies. And if you're looking for gated, guarded, first world style subdivisions, you're not going to find them there. You have to go about an hour's drive to San Pedro Sula. That's a big city of almost 1 million, and you can find almost anything there. However, like any big city in Latin America, San Pedro Sula has its very bad sections and very nice ones too, so you have to know your way around. However, smaller cities like Peña Blanca, Honduras, can be perfect for people who want to live the slow, easy life like it was back in the 60s and 70s in the States. Things happen slow there, everybody's friendly, but there's not a lot to do either, which suits some gringos and expats just fine. Because for some of us, it doesn't matter where we are, we find lots of things to do in our own way. But back to that showerhead business. I mentioned in a show a long, long time ago that almost all of Latin America is still wired electrically with a two-wire system. A hot and a neutral, usually designated black and white or red and white, as the electric wiring color codes go. You know, white is supposed to be neutral and red or black, 110 or 120 volts. You'll find down here in Latin America, almost all houses and buildings built more than 20 years ago do not have a green ground wire or three-prong outlets. Just the typical old-fashioned two-pronged outlets that your old grandmother, even your mother, used to have in that house that was built in the 50s or during the Depression. Of course, all U.S. structures were forced a long time ago to switch to a three-wire system with a dedicated ground. However, most Latin buildings, except for the very new ones, are still two-wire systems, which accounts for so many shocks at those shower heads. Because, you see, to avoid that, the shower head should have a green wire attached to the base that goes to earth ground. That earth ground would be a copper rod shoved deep into the ground where the green wire ultimately terminates. Of course, that round center terminal on each wall receptacle eventually terminates at that same copper rod in the ground. Now, what surprises many people these days is that many electronic appliances don't use the ground anymore. They've just got two prongs. Most of the time, they can be inserted either way. Someday, if I have enough time, I'll explain why. And it's only the heavier-duty household items that use a three-prong system, like washers, dryers, refrigerators, garbage disposals, etc. Now, throughout the world, it's mandatory that bathrooms and kitchens have the three-prong system, too. However, since there's no enforcement of that here in Latin America, except in new buildings, anything goes. You may see three-prong outlets in bathrooms and kitchens, but you'll never see those ground fault interrupters, you know, called GFIs, the outlets with the little red and black push button on them that you see in the bathrooms up in Seattle and Cleveland where you live. That's code up in the States, and believe me, when a house is built, inspectors will make sure those things are in place. Whereas down here in Latin America, no one, not even most electrical contractors, know what a ground fault interrupter is. Even though these days when you buy a cheap hair dryer, they've got a ground fault interrupter integrated right into the plug. You ladies out there know what I'm talking about. You've seen that, though you probably don't know what it's there for. Well, that's your fail-safe mechanism if you drop it into the bathtub or in a sink full of water. Anyway, Max's story kind of tells it all. And still, after telling us he and his roommates were shocked over and over again by this thing, no one was killed or seriously injured, yet they kept using it. Now, I'd never want to have one of those things in a house of mine. But just remember, you're going to run into those things, and you're going to be staying at people's houses and visiting, and you just might get shocked once in a while. So, yes, you can be afraid, but they're not nearly as dangerous as they look. Now, I don't know if that gives you any comfort or not. By the way, I think the only reason more people don't get seriously injured or even killed is because only 1 in 50 Latin households has a bathtub. Everyone takes showers. Almost no one takes baths. And electricity and bathwater don't mix. All right, that said, I'd like to make a little comment here that might shake people up a little bit. With the way things are going up in the States, there are tons of first world people trying to get their plan B off the ground. But it also seems that people always want expert advice for nothing. And you know what they say, you get what you pay for, right? I don't know what it is, but every time I open up my email box, I get an email or two or 10 from people asking me to perform the impossible. Well, better you hear this email. It's a perfect example, so here goes. Hi, Johnny. Let me tell you a little bit about myself. I'm 42 years old, an IT specialist. I hate what's happening up in the States. It's going to crumble, and I want out. I've been to Latin America, but only to the tourist places like Cancun and stuff. And I just know once I get down there, I'll have a lot of great ideas. So, Johnny, that said, I'm going to take a week or two and come back down to Latin America, this time off the Gringo Tourist Trail, like you recommend. And I want to make it worth my while. I don't want to waste my time. So, Johnny, could you tell me which country and city in particular I should concentrate on? I've only got a week or two, and I want to make it worth my while. Thanks, I appreciate it. Klaus. Okay, that's a real example of many of the emails I get. Now, let me ask you this. What if someone from Europe sent you an email like that and said, I'm planning on moving to the United States. I can't stand it in Europe anymore. I'm 42 years old, and I'm an IT guy. I've only been to the States once on vacation, and I went to Disneyland in Las Vegas. So, which region, state, or city in the U.S. do you suggest I go to make my next two-week vacation the most worthwhile for me and my plan B? Do you get what's happening here? How would you answer that? Well, I'll tell you how I answer emails like that. I send him a copy of the questionnaire I send out to people who I do phone consults with. That way I can collect a lot of information, a lot of pertinent details, their needs, wants, hobbies, habits, strengths, weaknesses, and their financial situation. And sometimes, most importantly, what kind of baggage they have. Real estate, kids, debts, parents in a nursing home, whatever. Then and only then, after going through that questionnaire and spending a half an hour or an hour on the phone or Skype, can we together work out the details of your wants and needs. So if you're thinking about voting with your feet or you've got that plan B in motion, you can throw darts at a map, but I prefer to make a study out of it. First off, you'll need to write down and analyze some vital pieces of information. So if you send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, I'll send you my questionnaire, the one I use to analyze each person's situation as they move along in their plan B. And even if you don't set up a Skype or phone consult with me, it'll give you a good idea of all the things you need to be thinking about. Now, going beyond that, to really kick your plan B into high gear, there's my Expat Essentials course. And believe me, there's nothing out there like it. If you're having any doubts as to how to get your own plan B underway, just go to expatplanb.com and you'll hit the ground running.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my three videos. See ya. Nos vemos.